On September 6th, it's reported in the New Musical Express that Epstein had signed another Liverpool artist, Cilla Black, who will debut with the Lennon and McCartney song Love of the Loved. The same day, Parlophone releases an EP by the Beatles with the tracks Please Please Me, From Me to You, Thank You Girl, and Love Me Do. It's called The Beatles Hits. On the back sleeve, there are some fascinating notes by the Beatles' publicist at the time, Tony Barrow. The four numbers on this EP have been selected from the Lennon and McCartney songbook. If that description sounds a trifle pompous, perhaps I may suggest you preserve this sleeve for 10 years, exhume it from your collection somewhere around the middle of 1973, and write me a very nasty letter if the pop people of the 70s aren't talking with respect about at least two of these titles as early examples of modern beat standards taken from the Lennon and McCartney songbook. How about 50 years, Mr. Barrow? On September 7th, She Loves You reaches the number one position in all charts in Britain and stays there for a total of 7 weeks. On October 13th, the Beatles top the bill on Sunday night at the London Palladium, a very popular British TV program. An estimated audience of 15 million viewers watched to see what they were about. Fans start riots outside the theater, and the national papers begin to discover Beatlemania. As written in Hunter Davies' biography, Beatlemania descended on the British Isles on October 1963, just as the Christine Keeler Profumo scandal fizzled out. It didn't lift for 3 years, by which time it had spread and had covered the whole world. There was perpetual screaming and yeah-yaying for the whole time, one long, continuous succession of hysterical teenagers of every class and color shouting uncontrollably, not one of who could hear what was going on from the noise of each other. Up in Liverpool, the Beatles' British fan club president, Frieda Kelly, becomes inundated with fan mail.
It just came in sackfuls, 2,000 to 3,000 a day. And I used to just close my eyes and go, oh, you know, yeah. Just put it up one side and mark the sacks, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. But gradually we got through.
The newspaper, The Daily Mirror, says, the Mersey sound is the voice of 80,000 crumbling houses and 30,000 people on the dole. The coming of Beatlemania happened suddenly and dramatically, and nobody was really prepared for it. Brian Epstein, in his book A Cellar Full of Noise, said, ever since their beginnings in the cavern, I've known that the Beatles would become major stars. But no one was prepared for the extraordinary events of late autumn 1963, when Britain's youth became enslaved by the music and the personality of the Beatles. Brian's brother Clive was amazed at their incredible popularity.
I always thought the Beatles were intriguing, but obviously it was difficult for me to accept what Brian said, that these guys were definitely going to be bigger than Elvis Presley, of course, in those days, was the giant of them all. And, you know, it would be... I must be honest about this. I really took his remarks with a pinch of salt. I mean, although I was involved with them on a business basis, I couldn't accept what Brian said, that they would be bigger than Elvis.
From this time on, everything changed, said Tony Barrow. My job was never the same again. From spending 6 months ringing up newspapers and getting no, I now had every national reporter and feature writer chasing me. George Harrison gives his impression of British Beatlemania.
Well, we feel flattered. I mean, it's
and
very
flattened.
Yeah, and flattened. But, I mean, if the screaming fans weren't there, then we wouldn't be here, would we?
On October 24th, the Beatles fly to Sweden for 5 concerts and a TV appearance. Thousands of howling, screaming fans converge on London Airport on their departure and again on their arrival.
Of young Beatle fans shouting, yelling, waving umbrellas and hats, shouting for their hero, the 4 young men in dark clothes who just disembarked from the huge white and blue twin jet airliner which has flown them from Stockholm. There's a crowd of photographers at the back of the plane. All the passengers came out first. This caused mounting excitement. The flashbulbs are going, 40 or 50 photographers, a lot of airline officials. And now there's quite a crush at the bottom of the steps at the rear of the plane. Scores of people down there with the flashbulbs going as the Beatles try to force their way through. Massive security precautions here to bring them to the main building. The fans are virtually going wild here on the balcony. They're shouting and yelling, and they're having a wonderful time despite the pouring rain. Now the Beatles are making their way towards the main terminal. They're waving and smiling at the crowds. They're wearing shorty black overcoats. The Beatle haircuts stand out for all to see amidst the milling throng down there.
On November 1st, the Beatles release another EP on Parlophone called The Beatles No. 1. Four more tracks from the Please Please Me LP. On November 4th, 1963, the Beatles make a triumphant appearance on the Royal Variety Show at the Prince of Wales Theatre. The charity event was attended by all of the show business establishment, minor society, and musical trade people, all hoping to get a glimpse of the Queen Mother, Princess Margaret, and Lord Snowden. It was an honor for the Beatles to be on the show, but then who could deny the biggest thing to hit Britain since the V2? They did their usual show with their pertinent jokes, and then John makes an introduction to a song that was to be echoed around the world.
For our last number, I'd like to ask your help. Would the people in the cheaper seats clap your hands? And the rest of you, if you'd just rattle your jewelry. Thank you. We'd like to sing a song called Twist and Shout.
The show was broadcast the following week to an estimated audience of around 26 million viewers. Paul and John give their impressions of this period.
But I think the whole bit really started when we did a Palladium show, and then later we were asked to do the Royal Variety Command performance, you know. And we met the Queen Mother, and she started clapping.
And Princess Margaret, too.
Yeah, and Princess Margaret.
Clive Epstein again.
I think the time when it really hit me was when the Daily Mail developed the four... I don't know whether you remember the type of logo they adopted. It was simply just the four boys' fringes and so forth, and it was, you know, slapped all over the front page. And, of course, then when they had their command performance in 1963, it was at that particular stage that I really... I realised that this was probably the biggest event in entertainment since goodness knows when. I mean, I'm quite sure there hadn't been anything similar for, well, maybe since Rudolph Valentino.
In the fall of 1963, it had become fashionable to be a Beatle fan in Britain. Grandmothers and tiny children joined the middle and teenage ranks, and practically everyone was clamoring to associate themselves with them. But apart from Stockholm, there was little interest overseas. At this point, manufacturers all over Britain were competing to get a concession to use the word Beatle on their products. Fans could buy copies of the collarless jackets, which were especially designed by Pierre Cardin. They could buy Beatle boots and even Beatle wigs. Most boys were growing their hair in the Beatle length and style, and some were told to leave school or work to get it trimmed. On November 16th, all three American networks send crews to the Bournemouth concert, and a few days later, Americans get their first look at the Beatles. The next day, a photo reporting team from Life magazine meets them at the Coventry Theatre. Paul McCartney says, "We're tickled pink over the American interest in us." 5 days later, the Beatles release their second album on Parlophone Records, with advance orders of 250,000 plus. The LP was called With the Beatles. The cover showed their four faces cleverly lit from one side, and was a certain steal from the work in Hamburg of Astrid's. Its stark artsy quality in black and white set the image of the Beatles for many years to come. The production quality was up because EMI had more money to spend on the sessions, and the music on it was yet another step in their growing talent as fine composers and performers. The opening track, with lead vocal by John, shows the vitality of the Beatles as a group. It's a powerful treatment of a Lennon and McCartney original and gave an indication of what the album was all about.